Good evening, I'm Dick Carlson. Our guest tonight is Senator Robert J. Dole of Kansas, the Republican vice presidential nominee. You know, usually vice presidential running mates don't have much of an impact either on the campaign itself or on an election. In this instance, you seem to kind of be the Republican campaign. Is that going to be a burden at all?
Well, it takes a great deal of work. I can't say that I haven't been pretty tired from time to time, but when President Ford comes on, it's really going to make a big difference in our campaign. I just sort of been conducting a holding operation. Hopefully it's been a holding operation. We have made some gains, but we've been active, I assume, in 25 or more states in the past 30 days, so we hope we have some impact for the good.
Well, critics say it's not so much a holding operation as it is that you're the Republican hatchet man out doing the president's dirty work while he sits back in the White House.
Well, I don't have a hatchet, but we have, of course, tried to clear up some of the confusion in the Carter campaign. There's so much we can't get to all of it by November, but I'll do my best to at least give the voters a clear-cut view of each of his positions on each issue. There's no way to nail him down or narrow it down to one view, but we haven't been, of course, conducting any personal attacks and will not. Senator Mondale went so far to say a week ago that, in effect, that President Ford was responsible for the increased suicides in America. Now, that seems rather a stretch of rhetoric, but we'll not engage in that. We'll just talk about how bad Mr. Carter is on the issues.
Now, Jimmy Carter said right after your nomination, pretty much, that he was very fearful of a personal vicious attacks coming from you. Why would he say something like that?
Well, I think it's the old straw man game. You announce in advance to the world that they're going to attack me, and then as soon as something happens, you say, ah, I told you so. This is a dirty, vicious, personal attack. It's an indication to me of a very slick, tough politician at work.
I wonder, you haven't said anything, as far as I know, about Jimmy Carter's recent Playboy interview, wherein he talks about mental adultery and then says the Lord will forgive him. What do you think about all that?
I think he gave an interview. I wouldn't have done it. I wouldn't have given the interview. But beyond that, as I said, I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole.
Well, I mean, don't you think it's a legitimate avenue of interest for voters, a fellow who is willing to talk about intimate things like that? And why would you refrain from talking about it yourself?
Well, I think Mr. Carter, made that choice. We all have interviews, and we say things that we wish we could retract. I've done that in the short time I've been on the trail. But there are other sources for interviews, just like the one I'm in right now. We can communicate with people without going to some specialized platform like Playboy. Just seems to me that it was a choice he made. I can't judge him on that, but and what he said is what he said. I can't comment on it.
Yeah, one of the statements that he also made to Playboy magazine, in which he compared Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon, and he, in effect, said they were liars and cheaters, that there was lying and cheating that went on. What do you think of that?
Well, I think perhaps he probably felt that former President Nixon was a good target to. But frankly, I feel that you can only kick anybody around so long, whether his name is Nixon. Lyndon Johnson is gone. It seems to me rather poor judgments to pick on someone who was the president of this country and is now passed on, particularly with his widow still living. I understand, of course, that Mr. Carter has called Mrs. Johnson to apologize. But all this shows to me is very poor judgment. Here's a man who wants to be the president of the United States. And if he's making statements like this, it indicates to me very poor judgment and should give us some indication what he might say down the line. And it's a little scary, frankly.
Was Lyndon Johnson a liar or a cheater, in your opinion?
I've never had any evidence of that. I think he was a very outgoing man, a total politician. He loved people. He loved to talk. He loved power. I don't know of anyone who ever proved that Mr. Johnson was a liar or a cheat. And I think if Governor Carter wants to engage in that, it just seems to me that's very poor judgment. I just can't believe a man who wants to aspire to the presidency would say a thing like that.
Now, does it seem to you at times that Jimmy Carter's running perhaps more against Richard Nixon than Gerry Ford?
Well, I think he's running against the Democrat Congress one day, and the next day it's hard to tell. He keeps bringing up the pardon. He says he wouldn't, but he brings up Watergate after he says he wouldn't. I think that's fair game. After all, we have to accept some of that burden President Nixon was the leader of the Republican Party as president. It was a tragic thing that happened in many ways. So I think we have to accept some of that. But the party was not involved. President Ford was not involved. And again, I question one's judgment, some sort of a guilt by association. That's the old McCarthy tactic that the American people deplore.
Would you accept Richard Nixon's endorsement if he offered it to you?
Well, he hasn't contacted me. I think perhaps he'll not contact me. He'd be endorsing the ticket if he did. I really don't know. I think that'd be it's never going to happen, put it that way.
All right. Let's take a commercial break, and we'll be back with Senator Robert Dole right after this announcement. We're talking this evening with Senator Robert Dole, who is well known for a biting and a well-honed sense of humor. I wonder, sir, what you think of Jimmy Carter's sense of humor.
Well, I really haven't detected any. I guess he has one. I've read about it, but I haven't. I've never had a chance to sort of catch him on the tube or in a speech. I've only met him once, so I just can't make a judgment. I don't think people fall out of their seats when he talks, but unless they've gone to sleep. But I just don't know enough about his sense of humor. I know he tried to develop one.
Do you perceive that Carter, that is overly sensitive to attack?
Oh, I think he is. I think he's been in politics really not a very long time, and he's lost and he's won, and he's now won some primaries, lost some primaries. It seems to me that when he, like any of us, I'll be very honest about it, when we're tired, we've had 14, 16-hour days, I think our sensitivity increases. It's sort of like a barometer, and unless we're properly fed and rested, like any other animal, we tend to get, we're irritable. We say things we wouldn't say, and I believe that probably his whirlwind efforts to cover the country may be responsible for some of the statements he's made, maybe even some of the statements in interviews in Associated Press and other places where he's in trouble over taxes. But again, I haven't, I don't, I guess I have raised a few hackles a time or two on Governor Carter, but not very many.
How badly has Carter hurt himself in the last week or so, do you think? He had a bad week, admittedly.
He had a bad week. First, it was the tax thing where he said, I didn't say, that if you're above the median income, you could expect higher taxes. Then he said he didn't think anyone wanted their taxes lowered in the same interview. Then just the icing on the cake, he said that he was going to treat all income alike, which meant if you held property and would qualify the capital gains treatment as you would now, that would be done away with. The net result is everybody over $14,000 would have to pay more taxes if Carter were elected and carried out what he said in an interview. Of course, he denied it. He wiggled and wobbled, but he's still on that hook. Now, maybe he'll get off, but it left an opening there that we tried to move into.
He also has said, of course, many times, along with Walter Mondale, that your record on tax loopholes and that of Jerry Ford is very poor.
Right, we're against loopholes. We have a very poor record supporting loopholes. Every time he says loophole, I think of that tax return he filed, the last one, where his total taxes were $67,000, as I recall. So he just said, rather than sending a check in for $67,000, he took off $41,000 for an investment tax credit on some peanut machinery he bought. And it's legitimate, it's legal. I favor the investment tax credit. But I wonder if Senator Mondale or Governor Carter consider that to be a loophole. I wonder how many of these poor Americans that he appeals to even made $41,000 in the past 3 years. And he took this much off his tax return. So I think Mr. Carter, I think demagoguery up to a point may be acceptable, but I think he's gone too far, and I think the American people are beginning to see that.
What do you see as meaningful tax reform?
I see as meaningful tax reform reducing taxes, not indicating an increase in taxes. And we've had a fairly meaningful tax reform measure this year. We increased the minimum tax on corporations. We limit the so-called tax shelters where the rich can escape taxation. We've taken away many of those. We've dealt with what they call tax deferral and overseas development corporations. We've raised the taxes on these operations. You know, it's a very exhaustive and extensive bill. It went through the Congress under two Democrat chairmen, Senator Long on the Finance Committee, a Democrat from Louisiana, Al Allman from Oregon, the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee. And so when Mr. Carter stands up and says tax reform, he's in effect indicting this Democrat Congress. They control the Congress. But we've had some tax reform, and I'm on the committee. I voted for many of the proposals.
I take it that's one of the things that you perceive to be a strong feature of a Ford Dole ticket. What are the others?
I mean, insofar as tax reform is concerned?
No, aside from tax reform, what are the other things that ought to appeal to voters from your point of view?
I think it's our basic philosophy. I think leadership and philosophy are the two keys in this campaign. And I don't care how many debates they have or what really happens. America wants and needs leadership, and they have it in President Ford. And I think his experience, some say, well, you think he's smart enough to be president, talking about Ford? Well, he graduated with honors from Michigan. He was in the top third of his class in Yale Law School. He's been in the Congress. He was vice president. He's president of the United States. He has the experience. I've had 16 years experience in the Congress. We have a conservative to moderate philosophy. I think you couple those two, it makes a strong ticket, particularly when you contrast it with the other very liberal ticket and Carter having no experience at all in foreign affairs or domestic policy on a federal level.
Jimmy Carter says that President Ford is a dormant president, that there have been few changes, if any, since the days of Richard Nixon.
Well, I'm not certain that people are clamoring for changes. Most of my people tell me, let's stop some of this stuff. Let's stop spending. Let's start looking at old programs and doing away with the waste. And that's President Ford's initiative. But he has addressed himself to very specific needs in education and transportation and recreation and job opportunities and tax reform and energy policy. He hasn't been asleep. It's just that Mr. Carter, it's a political effort we're in, and politics, as anyone in that, is fair game. So,
how would you describe the differences between you and Gerry Ford, Senator?
I think basically we're much the same in philosophy, but we've had our differences. This year, for example, I sponsored with Senator McGovern a food stamp program. I know President Ford is opposed to it. I've been suggesting, and it gets into an ag thing, area that wouldn't be of particular interest here, different treatment of certain commodities as far as loan rates are concerned. But by and large, we have pretty much the same views. We're from somewhat the same part of the country. I'd say a moderate to conservative philosophy. But at the same time, I consider myself to be very independent and a very independent senator. I've demonstrated that many times.
You criticized Mr. Ford back in 74 for a premature pardon of Richard Nixon. Have you changed your view at all?
Well, I think hindsight's always perfect. At the time, I'll have to confess, I was in a very tight race for the Senate. First we had the pardon by President Ford, then we had amnesty, then we had a grain embargo. And I think I said, Mr. President, please don't help me anymore, because we were behind in the polls. But I think as I look back on it, he made the right choice. It was a difficult choice to make. He did it based on the evidence he had and the information he had. And I think perhaps it's worked out in the best interest of the country.
Do you think Carter and Mondale hopping on that pardon is going to cause you any trouble?
I don't think so. The surveys don't indicate that. You can overdo it. You know, despite all of Richard Nixon's faults, he still has some friends around. And he's had a great deal of tragedy in his family. Mrs. Nixon was hospitalized with a serious stroke. And he's paid the penalty. He's paid the price. He surrendered the highest office in the world. And he did have some misdeeds. Don't misunderstand me. But it just seems to me that you just can't kick a dead horse around forever. And it seems to me that Carter and Mondale, if they have this vision for America, they ought to talk about the vision. They ought to be looking forward instead of looking backward.
All right, Senator, let's continue with our conversation with Senator Robert Dole after this commercial. You know, polls, as I'm sure you know, have pretty much shown the Republicans consistently trailing behind Carter. Obviously, you know that, Senator. But you seem to be catching up a little bit these days. What? First of all, those polls that were so bad,
right?
So awful. Do they really demonstrate some anti-Republican feeling, some pro-Carter feeling? What's behind that?
I think they indicated a sort of a mix of things. First of all, we had two outstanding candidates seeking the nomination, Governor Reagan and President Ford. And Carter had demolished all those big heavyweights like Mo Udall and others in a burst. But he did lose six out of the last eight primaries to Governor Brown and Frank Church and others. So he came out of that in any event as a winner. And he had this long honeymoon period. He went to the convention. They had a great convention in New York, a lot of color. It was totally under the control of Governor Carter. He came on very strong, made a fine acceptance speech, if you like that philosophy, and really was on the upgrade. And we were still fighting for the nomination, and we were the Reagan forces and the Ford forces. And it's not until our convention ended that the American people really perceived that a one-on-one proposition. And I think 32 points Carter was ahead was artificially high. And then it went down to, what, I think 13 points right after the convention, then down to 6 points, then back to 15 points, now back to 7 points. We believe it's even better than that now.
Now, I suppose a lot of course, is dependent on the perceptions people have of who is victorious in these debates, wouldn't you think?
Right, and I think they may be inconclusive when you consider all three debates. But we know in the South, for example, where Carter had a staggering lead of 28 to 30 points. It's been cut in half. In the state of Mississippi, for example, we're behind only 3 points. We believe we're even in the state of California, and this is a must state for us, so we can't lose the state of California and win the election.
How about the South? You're not expecting to do very well, are you?
Well, we're going to pick up some states in the South. I've been in 9 southern states, in South Carolina twice. We're going back. President Ford's headed that way this weekend. We're not riding off the South. We've been saying in the South, not ride off, but ride on. And we've cut that lead. I don't say we have, but the people in the South have reduced that lead by over 20 points. Because once he pulls this old neighbor bit on the Southerners, I'm your neighbor, vote for me. Well, they're not worried about geography. They're worried about philosophy in the South. And we'll be their philosophical neighbor, and he'll be their geographical neighbor after January. He'll be back in Georgia.
Would you like to see Ronald Reagan play a part in a Ford administration if there is to be another one?
Another Reagan or...
another Ford administration.
No, I very much so. I think Governor Reagan is one of really our outstanding leaders, and, of course, it's a choice for him to make. He may not want to play a part, not because he has any feeling against the President Ford. He may have other things in mind. He has a number of programs and a number of opportunities. And government service, let's face it, is not the highest reward in the world, particularly appointee government service.
So would a cabinet post be acceptable to the president, do you think, for Mr. Reagan?
I think so, but I think, again, it's Reagan's choice, and I think he would have to ask himself, first of all, can I serve? And he could. Secondly, would it be worth it from a selfish standpoint and from what he could do if he had total freedom, depending on what agency, what cabinet post, it would... A lot of mixes there, but whatever he does, he'll have a great influence on the course of conservatism in America, and that in itself is important. I think he'd play a much greater role in doing what he's doing than being bottled up in some cabinet post, and I think he may feel the same way.
Are you as conservative as Ronald Reagan, do you think?
Well, I think so. It's rather hard to judge because his is based on an administrative role as governor. My record's based on a legislative role, so it's a little different, but our views are pretty much the same.
You know, some people think that a divided government is a bad thing. That is, a democratically controlled Congress and the Republican president. And the Republican president would be a real drawback. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think it's not a bad thing. The best government would be a Republican Congress and a Republican in the White House. That would be the best government. But the second best is divided if we control one branch or the other. It just seems to me that we have to check the excesses of the liberals in the Congress. It's not good for California. It's not good for my state of Kansas. I don't think it's a healthy thing to have organized labor leaders, in effect, run the Congress, and that's what's happening. Let's don't give them the White House. You know, George Meany's busy enough running the AFL-CIO. And let's don't give him the keys to the White House. And I say that advisedly because he will have great influence on Governor Carter. He's already demonstrated that. Carter's been to his office a time or two. They've discussed it. He's gotten their endorsement. And I don't think organized labor hands out endorsements without some quid pro quo.
We often hear that the Republican Party is an anti-people party.
I've said that myself.
Yeah, what do you think about that?
I think we need to correct that image. We're not an anti-people party. We're perceived as anti-people. That's one reason I worked so hard on the food stamp reform bill. You know, it's difficult when you try to be responsible fiscally to vote for every spending bill. You can't do it. So you have to vote no, or you have to vote for the lesser amount. Instead of a 6% increase in Social Security, you vote for 5 or 4 because you're concerned about inflation and the impact inflation has on that same Social Security recipient. But people don't understand that. They think if you don't vote for the biggest increase or for the biggest spending program, you're anti-people. And I guess we need to articulate our views. We want to hold down inflation because that affects the poor. That affects those on fixed income more than any increase we give them. So we're coming around, and with President Ford back for 4 more years, I think we can get that done. We need to appeal to more blacks and more Spanish-speaking. We need to broaden the base of our party if we're going to be a second major party in this country.
Now, you hypothesized a Republican Congress, Republican-dominated Congress, Republican presidency. What's going to happen to the GOP? Even if you and President Ford win, do you really see the GOP ever getting into the position of controlling the government?
It'll take a while. We're not going to control the government after this election. Anyone who says we're going to control the Senate and the House has been at sea or somewhere for a while. But we will pick up some seats in the House, and we'll pick up some seats in the Senate. So we'll make some inroads. We'll be able to check the excess power that organized labor has, for example, or that the big spenders have. I think that's even a better term, the big liberal spenders in the Congress. Right now, President Ford has vetoed 56 bills, but many have been overridden because of the big spenders in the Congress. If we can eliminate some of those and put in some moderate to conservative member, either party, frankly, it would help.
All right, let's take a break, Senator. We'll return with Senator Robert Dole after this commercial. You know, Senator, Jimmy Carter has fairly successfully addressed himself to the idea of a lack of public confidence in Washington.
Right.
How do you and President Ford counter that?
Well, I've got a lot of lack of confidence in Washington. We've been dominated by Democrats there for 40 out of 44 years, the last 22 years. I don't see anybody could have too much confidence in Washington. If it weren't for having a Republican president, we wouldn't have any confidence in Washington. And I say this not in a partisan sense, but you've got to have a check and a balance in Congress. Now, I think Governor Carter's addressing himself to that. And when he does that, he defeats his own purpose because we now have some check and some balance. If we send Carter there, a liberal Democrat president and a liberal Congress, we have no check and balance. He said many times, well, even though I'm not for the legislation, I would sign it. And we need a leader, not a follower in the White House. And I think he's right. There's a great lack of confidence. Now, I don't say all Republicans are perfect. A lot of personal things have been going on that upset people. But what really upsets the American people is the fact we just keep passing more spending programs. There are more abuses, more fraud, more problems, and the real beneficiaries somehow are never reached or never reached properly. We ought to review programs, take a hard look at them, kick out the bad, and expand the good.
How do you assess the effect that Gene McCarthy's candidacy might have on Jimmy Carter's chances?
I think it could have some impact in large states where the liberals, and I think some of these interviews that Carter has given might swing people to Gene McCarthy. He is an outstanding man. I knew him in the Senate. In fact, saw him last week, and I wished him luck. I think he's the second best choice.
Well, Gene McCarthy says he doesn't see much difference between Gerry Ford and Jimmy Carter. Doesn't make much difference to him which one is elected. He'd rather be elected himself.
Right. Well, I think that's a fair statement. If I were running, I would have to say I don't see much difference between A and B. I see C is the best choice. But it seems to me that McCarthy at least has the experience. He was on the Senate Finance Committee. He served in the Senate. He's been a candidate in the national campaign. He ran very well against Johnson in New Hampshire, as you recall. But he has no chance of being president. But he does give the real liberal, person who has very liberal, pure liberal views, it gives them a sound choice because they're a little fearful of Governor Carter.
Of course, Gene McCarthy's not the only one that says he doesn't see much difference between the two major candidates.
No, there are a number. I think Lester Maddox said the same thing.
Well, so did David Broder. He's a pretty good political analyst.
David Broder is a good analyst. I think he may be seeing more changes in the last 30 days. I think he saw a few changes last week.
Looking forward to your debate with Mondale?
I think so. We'd like to do that in the South. He's never been there. We'd like to... He's there on television. We'd like to get him down there in person, except he goes to Plains now and then to refuel. Mm-hmm. But he's never really been in the South to campaign.
Are you serious about getting him in the South? You don't think that's likely, do you?
Well, we've made the challenge. I should think he'd want to go down there, let people look at he's the most liberal senator we have, and I think his liberal views should be exposed in the South. I hope he comes. He's a good friend of mine. We've been debating for years in the Senate. We'll just have to change our forum.
Thank you, Senator Robert Dole of Kansas, Vice President nominee for the ticket, Ford Dole ticket. Appreciate you being here, sir. Thank you very much for watching Carlson & Company. And we will see you again next week. Good night.
Here it goes. We're now heavily dependent on imports of crucial materials. Zinc, copper, bauxite, molybdenum, as well as all other products. With careful planning by government and industry together, we can eliminate those bottlenecks by anticipating needs. We haven't done that in the past, but it ought to be done again. We can provide incentives for research and development. Of all the developed nations in the world, we spend a smaller proportion of our gross national product on basic research and development. This will provide us a way to eliminate waste. Not too long ago in Plains, Georgia, I had some people come there for a meeting on energy. And the Dow Chemical representatives said they had worked very hard as an industry to cut down on waste of fuel. And they were now producing the same quantity of products with a 40% reduction in energy consumption. So with good research and development, we can meet those needs, anticipate problems, and that industry and government together understand how they can cooperate to prevent bottlenecks, shortages, high costs, rapid inflation, and disturbance to our economy. We need to have voluntary cooperation between labor and management in holding down prices and wages that are increased above and beyond the actual needs for profit or for adequate wages. And one of the things that always aggravates an existing serious problem is unpredictability about the future. If there's no way for business and industry and government to cooperate on a regular and predictable basis, labor feels we need 6% increase in wages next year to meet the impact of inflation. If they don't know what's going to happen next and have no place to play in the decision-making process, they'll ask for 15% just to cover all eventualities, and they'll get it. The same with industry. If an automobile manufacturer says it's going to cost me $50 a car extra next year to cover the anticipated inflationary cost, if they don't know what's going to happen next and have no role to play in the decision-making process, they'll ask for $200 a car, and they'll get it. So we need to have voluntary restraint, not mandatory price and wage control, to hold down the impact of inflation when it's not necessary. I would like to strengthen the Wage and Price Council and to have some notification before wages or prices are raised to me as president and to the public. These are, I think, 11 specific things that can be done to hold down inflation that are not now being done. I'd like to say one other thing to you in general and in closing. In the last 21 months, I've had a chance...